Dear reader, I imagine that you are partway through the book. My publisher suggested I provide these little voice notes for readers as they get through the book, because she felt that they might need, I don't know, some intimate notes from me as to how I handled things as I wrote the book. So I'm sitting here with my dad, and I'm going to get him to ask questions that he felt lots of you might be asking yourselves as you're partway through the book. I'm here in Canberra, which is where I grew up, where a lot of my family live, and you'll hear all of the Australian bird life. I often say that the birds in Australia are like Australians, extremely loud and bodacious, and there's no getting around the noise. So, Dad, my father's called Michael, by the way, and he's going to just ask some questions. Dad, do you want to ask the first question that came to mind as you were reading the book as a Substack subscriber to start with? So you've really been part of the journey from the beginning, and I know you've got some questions that you would like me to answer from your own point of view.
Well, one thing that comes to mind, Sarah, is that you don't do normal book titles. And I've wondered sometimes, what was the story behind this one? You know, how do you know it's the right one? Do you end up overthinking it?
Yeah, Dad, as you know, I overthink most things and doubt a lot of my decisions on a lot of things. But with my book titles, I never have. I generally get the idea for it sort of only really after a few months into writing the book, and it comes to me and it just feels intuitively right. So we make the beast beautiful. I'd come across that proverb and I knew it was right. This One Wild and Precious Life came from a poem by Mary Oliver, and even though my publisher said it would be impossible to get permission from her estate, she'd just passed away recently, you know, just prior to me starting the book. In fact, while I was writing the book, but I knew it was the right title and just was convinced it would come to be. And sure enough, Mary Oliver's estate read my book and felt that it was a really good place for, you know, her legacy to wind up. With this one, I Eat the Stars, as I explain at the front of the book, and I won't go into the story again because many of you have probably read that first part, but it comes from a poem. Rebecca Elson, she passed away only a few years ago. Her estate also gave me permission. Again, it was up in the air as to whether they would give me permission, but I just knew it was the right title. It sits with me. And the other thing is, Dad, I have a vision of what the cover's going to look like as I'm writing the book, well before I've finished the book. I know what it needs to evoke. I know how it needs to look on the bookshelf. I know how it needs to feel, right down to the paper stock and the texture of things, the fonts. And so my poor publishers have to live with me as I try to bring it about. But, it is something that just sits with me, and I know it to be true. And in some ways, I wind up halfway through the writing process writing to the title, bearing it in mind the whole way. And in this case, this poem spoke to me, you know, as an antidote to fear of death, I eat the stars. And as I wrote the book, I had to take on that mindset as I confronted death. You know, the death of the system, the death, potential death of the human species. I had to live as though I was going to eat up life now, you know, and particularly eat up the beauty of nature. One of the rare things in my life that I don't overthink, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.